This is Dennis Michelson, D. Mike. Welcome to the Data Lab on For Frequency's Sake. We're going to be talking about the work that goes on behind the scenes to hopefully make you a smarter fantasy football player in the new season ahead. And joining me as he does each and every week, he is the professor. It's John Bush. John, welcome back.
Hey, Dennis. I'm always excited to talk data and to draw the curtain, see who's behind the curtain at the Data Lab. It's fun. This is fun stuff.
Quite often our discussions will lead to ideas for future research projects, which is the fun part when you get multiple people together talking fantasy football and discussing different concepts. It's almost like the sum of the parts is greater, you know, than just the sum, you know, of your intelligence and my intelligence. We get something a little bit higher than just the additive. So that's always good here on the Data Lab, because Lord knows we don't have enough research projects going. There's only about 20 of them right now in the Data Lab. But one of the concepts I want to talk about, because sometimes before you get into a study of the actual data, you need to have a concept and a hypothesis of what you are looking at. And I've always had this theory when it comes to drafting my teams. And I'm not sure whether it's based on reality, because, of course, I've been keeping my little notebook of how I do each year for every team that I play with. But is it reality? Is it just one of those biases that you build in? But when I'm early in a draft, Professor, I like to minimize my uncertainty as much as I can. But as the draft goes on, I like to assume more risk and more uncertainty. So I'll buy into a guy who is a bigger boom or bust cycle guy, because I don't want a team of ordinary players. So once I get past a certain point in the draft, once I got my starters, once I got my first reserves at each position, I just go for the upside. And that, I don't know if that is factual based yet, or whether it's just a bias that I've used for years.
I think when you consider that deeper in the draft, you're kind of left with two kind of approaches. You're drafting kind of a handcuff thing, or you're drafting a boom or bust kind of situation. So I think, and they could be the same player, but it could be different as well. So I think you need maybe to part that out a little bit, because some of these deeper players may only, let's say, pay off, boom, for you if there is an injury or the coach gets the hot hand idea or whatever the newest thing is that they're onto, and they've set somebody down or pull back, you know, them being a starter. So that's kind of how I view later. Is this a boom bust kind of thing, or is this a handcuff kind of almost a hoarding kind of concept that I know you and I both love, for especially running backs there. It always feels, if I'm stuck on anything, just hoard another potential handcuff, and that makes me feel better. I don't know if it helps me, but I always feel like, hey, this has value or could have
and
value.
You can always change your roster in a small league. So if you only got like six or seven bench spots and you're only in a 10-team league, kind of the standard ESPN league, there's a lot out there on the waiver wire. And that's a whole lot different than if you're in a 14-team league with slightly larger rosters, then the waiver wire will get a little bit more lean. But in redraft, I also have a strategy that I avoid the bad teams early. It sounds like a funny thing to say, but I just kind of like to be locked in with as many really solid teams as possible, especially at the running back position, because I want teams that are playing from ahead. I want them to have a lead so they use their running backs more to kill the clock in the second half and to kind of grind the game out. And so I look for the best teams that I can find when it comes to, again, the first 6, 8, maybe as many as 10 rounds in a redraft league, in a standard redraft league. I'm avoiding the bad teams. I'm staying away from the teams that I think are going to be the doormats. Wide receivers, I might change that up a little bit because there is a lot of junk time targets that come about if you're way behind. But running backs and quarterbacks, I want my guys to be on winning teams.
And, you know, I think when people get deeper into the draft, there's this tendency that you want to kind of balance things. And I've noticed that over the years, tracking some data I've done, that people about the sixth round, they kind of like to have at least 2 RBs, 2 WRs, and maybe a quarterback and tight end. That seems like a balanced team. And if you've got instead 5 running backs or something, that's going to put a lot of pressure, and you don't need to find yourself into that position unless there is a reason for that. So the stronger players probably won't pay much attention to a team balance till maybe later in the draft, but just realize in a, you know, kind of a just a public league out there, there's going to be a lot of tendency, and that is going to lead people to grabbing players off maybe the suboptimal teams, kind of opposite of what you just said your strategy is. So you'll be potentially going against what they're doing, and that may be why you do pretty good, is you're actually not chained to kind of that perception of trying to have a balanced team, whatever that means, however you define that. I don't like that kind of thing where people, you know, oh, I've got to have so many of this or that. I understand we all have to have a quarterback and a tight end, and in PPR we want nice running backs and pass catching RB. I understand that, but I don't want to make that something that, okay, I've got to pick from a suboptimal team. I don't like to be controlled that way. I like to feel like I'm above the fray and doing what I need to do. I don't like to play from behind, and that sometimes things get muddled, and even I will, you know, especially if it's a new system, you know, like I did the Scott Fishbowl last year. I didn't do it this year. It kind of befuzzled me. I felt like the whole time I was never ahead. I was always kind of eating everybody's dust. You know, I guess at the racetrack, I'm always drafting behind the good cars, and I never felt like I could make that move. And that wasn't what I wanted to do. And I tried to avoid that scenario in my drafting.
And you got to prepare for your draft with similar drafts. Last year with the Scott Fishbowl, I came right out of a couple of leagues against some pretty tough competition where we were all pretty even in skill set. So we would, you know, my position hoarding method where, you know, I would just take the best player that was available. I didn't care about balance to my team is how I always build my teams, because in every other league that I play in, you can trade players. So if I end up with 8 really solid running backs because I drafted the best player available and he happened to be 8 times in the draft was the running back, so I'm heavy at running back, I can make a trade to get a wide receiver or a tight end or a quarterback if I'm lacking there. So I came out of a couple of those leagues where I was just drafting knowing, hey, it doesn't matter what my team makeup is. I can make trades after the fact to get my team better. I'll often do a 2-for-1 trade where I'm giving up more talent than I'm getting back, but I'm improving my roster. I might be giving up a wide receiver 2 and a running back 2, and people would look at a trade calculator and say that you're getting killed because you're only getting one player back, but I'm getting back a WR1 or a tight end 1 or a quarterback 1. I'm getting back a better player than I had at that roster position, even though I'm giving up some depth and I'm giving up some quality. In the Scott Fishbowl, you can't trade. So when I made 2 really poor decisions at wide receiver and then had one of my running backs go down, I'm all of a sudden stuck with whatever's on the waiver wire. And I made some good choices on the waiver wire, and then I made some bad choices on the waiver wire, but not understanding the difference of a league where you can't trade really cost me last year in the Scott Fishbowl. And I think I've learned that lesson because I got a more balanced team this year going into the season, although I'm only about halfway through the draft right now. So I've got lots of other decisions to make. But right now I'm pretty happy. I'm pretty sure that my team will be one of the top 4 in the division. And after that, it's a crapshoot of how you do in a tournament. Because in a tournament, it does pay to have more stackable players. I've got a few stacks, but not a lot. And I really haven't looked ahead to the playoffs to see how my stacks are with strengths of schedule, because I'm just worried about even getting there first. I'm worried about building a good balanced team so I can get to the playoffs. It's the old learn to walk before you learn how to run method when it comes to the Scott Fishbowl. But the other big mistake that I made last year was in my home league. It was a 10-team home league where I'd come out of, again, drafting against some really good, analysts in fantasy, in redraft, and everybody was on the either the 0 running back kick or the I'm only taking 1 quarterback kick. So I got my quarterback late, got my running backs early. I was stocked up and I did well in those leagues. Well, then I went into my home league forgetting that every single one of the more casual fantasy football fan thinks they have to have 2 tight ends and 2 quarterbacks, even in a 10-team league. So there were about 16 quarterbacks off the board before I realized that I was in trouble and I ended up having to stream quarterbacks all year. I still made the playoffs, but I got beat bad in the playoffs because I didn't have a solid quarterback. I had lots of talent elsewhere, but I was never able to make the deal because, unfortunately, in my home league, everybody knows that I eat and breathe fantasy football. So if I'd suggest a trade, they'd turn it down just because they thought I was trying to take advantage of them. So it made it tough to trade in those leagues where people know that you write, that you analyze the data more than they do. It's tough sometimes. But when it comes to this concept of uncertainty and this idea of safety early, give me some consistent, good, solid players that have a low bustability rate. And I'm not talking about injuries because it's impossible to forecast injuries. I'm just talking about guys that, at running back, I've got a pretty good idea of what their volume is going to be. At wide receiver, I got a pretty good idea that I got the number 1 guy in targets on that team. Those are the guys I'm going safety first early in rounds, especially the first 5 rounds. Is there a way to measure that concept to see if it actually works?
I think I have done that in the past, looking at, I have a kind of an uncertainty measurement and I can apply that. I haven't done that this year with us working on our website and everything, but I can apply that. That's usually something I look at in my victory diary after the fact. Like, did I get a little bit crazy? Was I really reaching? It's kind of more of a Monday morning quarterbacking after the you know, the game is done, then you count your money kind of thing. So I usually don't do the serious look at, you know, what I did in certainty. I think you just got a feeling, having done a lot of like best ball, whatnot, and a lot of drafts up to this point, you kind of get in a rhythm and you keep going. And I think you just kind of develop a feel for the uncertainty.
And I think that's how I built my statistical tools, because best 10 looks at upside. Consistency, yes, to a 10-point floor with a quarterback to a 25-point floor in a 6-point throwing league. Those consistency figures, if they're high enough, I'm happy, because I know I've taken uncertainty out of the game as much as I can. If I look at two players on a roster at the same position and I know who's going to get the most volume, that's where I feel safer. But I use all of that data to forecast my best 10 score predictions for my weekly value for the upcoming season. So maybe the reason I draft that way is because I built my statistical tools that way with a bias in them, because anything you build to try to analyze data is going to have a somewhat of a bias on it. It's impossible to get bias out of everything we do. But again, the success that I've had using these concepts has led me to use them more. So whatever we're doing in fantasy football, if we're having success at it, keep doing more of that, I guess, is the best advice.
And, you know, that's, like I said, I think I just get into a rhythm. And it also depends on my draft pick, where I'm picking this year. And playing in a lot of tight end premium leagues. And right now, I've been pushing to try to grab Kelce in round one. And if I can't get him, then depending on what's there, I will go running back or wide receiver. Just depends. I picked up Harris from Pittsburgh. Actually, I think this morning, Kelce was gone. I think I was the 10th pick. And if he hadn't have been there, I probably would have gone with one of the Davante Adams or somebody, you know, a hardcore wide receiver, and picked up a second round running back kind of thing. But just depends on kind of what's there, kind of reading the board. And I think later today I picked up Mixon to go with Harris. So I've got a team that's going to be strong with running backs. So now I probably will have to look at, you know, picking up a potential tight end or wide receivers. Just depends on what's out there coming up. I've been finding the third round in my research, I posted that article, has been the hardest historically using just ADP. If you did nothing else, I found that it's been really hard over the last 9 years or so on average to get a good third round pick that had any upside. And that's a great article. And so when I hit the third round, I've been looking for that, deliberately trying to say, okay, I got to pick. So I'm not reaching in the third round for anybody. I'm retreating to a more safe position in the third round. And then in the fourth and fifth, I can reach if I need to. So it's a kind of a combination of draft picks, am I in a tight end premium? And then kind of what round it is, I kind of do a micromanaging of my drafts. And we probably should, in the data lab, talk about mock drafting and our strategy, just kind of see what we come up with, maybe to take folks through that. or maybe even look at what we drafted before and kind of the first five, six picks. Why did we do that? Probably should do an article just kind of after the fact. This is what I did in the last 10 drafts kind of thing. Maybe I should do that. So there's an idea right there.
I like that idea. And I'm actually working on a study now to see just how much a tight end premium has to be tight end premium to, you know, how much the tight end premium has to be to determine if you change your strategy at the tight end position. And it'll be interesting to see how that study turns out. And as always, head on over to thescienceoffantasyfootball.com. Check out the articles and the studies done by the professor John Bush and myself. And hurry on back here to For Frequency's Sake next week for another edition of the Data Lab.
Get to work!